Affairs Report, 30 minutes of conversation designed to make you better aware of the world around you. The World Affairs Report is brought to you by the World Affairs Council of Pittsburgh in cooperation with KQV News Radio. The World Affairs Council is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that has been bringing the world to Pittsburgh for over 80 years. To learn more about the council and upcoming events, please visit worldpittsburgh.org. And now, the World Affairs Report.
Hello, everyone. I'm your host, Angelica Ocampo, and I couldn't be happier for the guest that we have today with us. It's somebody who's born and raised in Pittsburgh, but has become larger than life and makes Pittsburgh very proud through his work. I'm talking about Bill Strickland, who many of you may know through his work. Bill Strickland is the president and CEO of Manchester Bidwell Corporation and its subsidiaries, Manchester Craftsman's Guild and Bidwell Training Center, and also the National Center for Arts and Technology. All of this we will be talking about in a minute. Mr. Strickland, it's a real honor and pleasure having you with us today.
Muy bien, gracias.
And he's also taking Spanish lessons.
Oh, yeah.
So, among many other things that, I mean, there's so much to talk about, but one of the things that strikes me is that the Manchester Bidwell Corporation, there's a lot that when you talk about your work, you talk a lot about how the environment shapes the experiences of people. And when you go to your facility, it's for people who haven't seen it, it's tremendous. We're talking about a 62,000 square foot facility, which includes a 350 seat music and lecture hall. It has a library, it has art studios and labs, dining and meeting rooms, state-of-the-art award-winning audio and video recording, and it also has a 40,000 square feet greenhouse,
which
is home to 25,000 orchids that you produce for wholesale distribution. That's tremendous. That's amazing. How, before we go into your actual work, how important is this, the sense of where things happen to you, the environment?
Well, very, because probably because of my mother, who raised us in an environment that was very ecumenical, and she supported my interest in the arts early on when I was in ninth grade. And I was very fortunate to have met a school teacher, a guy named Frank Ross, who was a ceramic artist, who introduced me more formally to clay, and I got pretty good at it. And I literally turned the basement of our house into a little ceramic studio, mm-hmm. and my mother put up with all that, and the dust, and this and that. Mm-hmm. But it allowed me to develop and refine my interest in clay, and I took over the laundry room and turned that into a photography studio, and that was the basement of our house for many years. I took those experiences and transferred them much later to the Manchester Craftsman's Guild, which started off in a row house in the neighborhood in the 60s, working with kids in the community, doing photography and ceramics. So that was really the very humble origins of Manchester Craftsman's Guild. It started in a row house in the neighborhood. In the 70s, I took over Bidwell, what was then called the Bidwell Cultural and Training Center, and turned it into a vocational school that worked with the chronically unemployed, people on public assistance, people who had really kind of lost their way academically and educationally. And we provided a tuition-free vocational education for those students to give them a skill to help them get back on their feet and to receive gainful employment and go to work, generate a living, take care of their family, etc. So these days, Manchester Craftsman's Guild is the arts program that works with kids primarily from the Pittsburgh Public Schools.
How many kids?
We have 300 students. Okay. 200 come from the public school system, and then we work with Holy Family Institute and the Department of Human Services, and we work with another 100 kids in that system as well. So on any given week, there are as many as 300 students in the arts who come from the public school, Department of Human Services, Holy Family Institute, and so on. And on any given week, or more specifically, a year, we have between 225 vocational students that go through the center as well to get career enhancing education and to seek employment.
Mm-hmm. And then you have training for culinary arts.
Culinary arts, medical technology.
Laboratory work.
Chemical technicians, pharmaceutical technicians, electronic medical records, horticultural training, et cetera. So we have vocational programs that give people skills they can go to work in industry. And then we have the arts program that works with kids from the school system, as I mentioned.
Why horticulture? What was it? Because you started, as you say, you know, your interest was in arts initially.
Correct.
And then you moved into culinary arts, I think.
That's correct.
And what then prompted you to move into horticulture and the orchids, which is, by the way, a fabulous place to visit.
Oh, yeah, it's very beautiful. Yeah. Well, I was introduced by a friend to orchids and really got fascinated with them in a visit to Hawaii. And I started visiting greenhouses, and then I went to California and visited some more greenhouses. And as the result of five or six visits, I got really intrigued. So I bought a book, Orchids for Beginners, and started reading up about
it. Just for yourself?
Yeah, initially, mm-hmm. just to pursue a personal interest. And then I thought, I could turn this into a training program. And that was the genesis of the idea of raising the money that 6 years later resulted in building the greenhouse, so we could educate people in the horticultural industry.
And today, most of the orchids in this area are sold?
Most of the high-end florists
right.
buy our orchids. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we specialize kind of in more of the high-end range of the market, and we've done pretty well.
So how many people do you think how many people have gone through your training programs?
Thousands. Over the
thousands.
Years.
You know, you say somewhere that you have a great TED Talk, 2002, I think it was, when you say children become the teachers that they have, which is an expression that I love. I think to all of those people, you've become Frank Ross.
Oh, in many ways, that's very true.
Mm-hmm.
Most of his philosophy, his attitude about teaching, he created a classroom environment in the school that really was the model for what I ended up building as a training center. Frank Ross said, it's very important to have a coffee pot in the room with fresh coffee. It's important to have music. So we had jazz music in his classroom. That transferred later to our music hall where we have jazz. So he created an environment. There was always poetry. And so he created this very eclectic environment, but it was rich and fertile with ideas and excitement. All the innovative teachers used to congregate in his room in the morning before they would actually go out and teach their individual students. And I was right in the middle of that. So I profited from being in that environment, listening to all these really bright teachers get very excited about what they were doing.
Mm-hmm. So did you stay in touch? Did he see the effect that he had on you?
He saw me. I went on to fly jets. He knew me as an airline pilot.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I flew 727s for Braniff Airlines. Huh. And he knew me as an airline pilot. And I also kept my hand in clay, too. So he knew me that I would be successful. I'd graduated from college. I'd started Manchester Craftsman's Guild. So he knew I was kind of on his way. I was on my way. But he was killed in a traffic accident about 3 years before I built the building that you saw. And so he never got a chance to see it. But his teacher did come see it before he died, a guy named Wes Mills.
Uh-huh.
And Wes came over and was very touched by what we had put together.
So what do you think is the magic that comes?
Hope. Okay. Hope is the magic.
Because you've been tremendously successful in engaging kids in issues that usually they're not interested in, like arts and just exploring other areas in their life.
Well, what I've discovered is that the children have all these potential abilities and interest areas, but they need to be in an environment that allows them to express it. We don't create the interest. What we do is provide opportunities to demonstrate it. And so when the kids see photography or clay or digital imaging or whatever, it gives them an outlet to express a lot of the feelings and ideas that they've had pent up in them for a long time. And that's, I think, the principal value of the centers, is it creates opportunities for kids to discover their potential.
Mm-hmm. So you keep talking about how environment shapes lives. And when you go to the, and I keep coming back to the building because it's really impressive, if you're there and you keep talking about the sunlight and the food and the flowers and the experience for people who may not have hope, as you just mentioned, to really experience the best that life has to give.
That's the cure for cancer of the human spirit.
I love that quote.
So that's, you give them what that, I figured out.
Yeah.
That you put those ingredients in most communities, you can cure the cancer that's troubling these children.
Mm-hmm. Children and grown-ups, right?
And adults as well, correct. Mm-hmm.
Give them back hope.
Yeah.
So you've been very successful here in Pittsburgh, but now you're expanding across the U.S.
And internationally.
And internationally. Let's talk a little bit. You have nine centers.
Nine centers open and operating,
mm-hmm.
One of which is in Akko, Israel,
right,
for Jews and Arabs.
Right. And let's leave that for a minute. But before, you have other nine centers that,
yeah,
are
Chicago,
here in the US.
New Haven, Buffalo, Boston, Cleveland, et cetera, Brockway, Pennsylvania.
With the same premise that you have here. You put
exactly
together arts.
Beautiful environment, vocational education, arts education, world-class environment, world-class architecture, et cetera. Huh? And every center getting the same outcomes as Pittsburgh with the same population of people.
That's amazing.
So what we know is that race is not a dividing factor. It can be a unifying factor depending on the environment in which the program is expressed. So we figured out a way to get people that seemingly are opposed to each other to cooperate. And it's been very, very exciting to see that mm-hmm. develop.
Now, before we move to Israel, which yeah. I'm really interested in talking to you about, you actually studied international studies at Pitt.
I was in diplomatic history.
Right. So, as you know, at the World Affairs Council, we try to instill in children and also in people in general an interest in global affairs. And sometimes it's hard. People consider it kind of like
boring
or removed. Maybe, you know,
exactly.
Like something that is not relevant to their day-to-day lives. What was it that drew you to international affairs?
Well, primarily the professors I had at the University of Pittsburgh, mm-hmm. who were really pretty extraordinary men and women. Dave McCormick in labor history, Tom McCormick in international affairs. He was a diplomatic historian who lit up the classroom with his intelligence. And I just really became my mentor. And that's why I got intrigued. I had planned to be a diplomat, and I got into diplomatic history pretty deep.
Mm-hmm.
And
why didn't you
pursue
that
it?
Route? Yeah.
Because I realized that you got to be wealthy in order to become an ambassador. And I thought, well, everybody would recognize my genius, and all of a sudden I'd become the ambassador to Africa. You end up working in the State Department in the basement for years as a GS-14 or whatever they pay them, and you don't end up becoming an ambassador right out of diplomatic school.
So it seems what you really wanted to do is travel the world, because then you went on and became a pilot.
Yes, that's correct.
What you wanted to do is travel.
Well, what I wanted to do was to figure out how the world works, uh-huh. and the best way to do that is go visit the world and find out for yourself.
Uh-huh.
And the airlines just gave me an instrument, a vehicle to begin to really pursue that. Because my principal assignment was Central and South America, so I was flying Acapulco and Colombia and all this kind of stuff. So, which is very cool.
Mm-hmm. That's where you picked your first Spanish?
No. I developed my interest in Spanish flying internationally, but I wanted to do it primarily because interest was always there in Spanish, but I started visiting Costa Rica, and I got really intrigued with the language. And then I got lucky and met one of the professors at my daughter's school, Jack Gaddis, who put me in touch with Alicia Cordarubias, who ended up becoming my permanent instructor, who's extraordinary mm-hmm. and brilliant. And
she's wonderful. She's a friend of mine also.
See,
me
también. And she just has made Spanish magical for me. and has committed herself to my improvement and eventually my mastery of the language.
We're talking to Bill Strickland, who's president and CEO of Manchester Bidwell Corporation, and among many other recognitions, he has received the MacArthur Fellowship Genius Award and the Goy Peace Award. So you were talking about the center being expanded throughout the country and also abroad, and as recently as November of last year, you opened a center in Accra, Israel?
Yes, that's correct.
Can you tell us a little bit how that project came about, how that got started?
Well, it started with the Jewish community has had a very big impact on my center here in Pittsburgh. And in part, I wanted to give back. And part of the way I thought that might be possible is to do something significant in Israel to begin to, you know, express some gratitude for what the Jewish community had done for me here in Pittsburgh, but also to see if I could make a contribution to reconciliation in that whole conversation. And I thought my work in Pittsburgh would be a great example of what could be done elsewhere. So to test out that theory, Mark Frank, who's our chair, who's local, and I went to Israel. And David Shapiro from the Giant Eagle Grocery Store Company bought me a ticket to go over so I could test out the idea, and it turned out to be pretty successful.
So what is happening there today?
Well, today we have a center that's open and thriving.
Right.
It has 50% of the students are Arab Israelis. The other 50% are Jews. All Israelis going to the center cooperatively and affirmatively, and we're well on our way to developing technology programs, photography programs. We're going to do culinary arts, etc. And these will be contemporary training programs that will put people to work in the professions for which they have chosen. We're also having some early conversations with Hewlett-Packard about installing some advanced technology digital equipment so that the students are going to be trained on state-of-the-art equipment as well.
So you have Israeli and Palestinian students together in a classroom cooperating, working together.
That's correct.
How do you make that happen?
Well, you build a world-class environment to start with. You get world-class faculty, you get a world-class board of directors, and you hire people that really are engaged with the community. Our director, Naeem, is Muslim, and our chairman is Jewish, and they cooperate. So they are a living example of our philosophy, and that's a great symbol for the kids.
How can you scale that and turn it into policy in some way? How can you?
Slowly.
Okay. Slowly. Well, it's been a while.
Yeah, we've been working in Israel for 10 years to get this built.
No, I know. But the issues have been going on.
Oh, no,
for a while.
I fully appreciate that. But it's not miracles. It's mainly hard work and patience and determination. And so Tel Aviv now apparently has expressed some interest in this. Before Sharon Peres died, I had a chance to tell him this story in his office at the Sharon Peres Peace Center in Israel. And he said, keep going. I think you've got this thing figured out. Just stay with it. God took him from us before he had a chance to visit the center, but I believe he would have been at the opening.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Have you been contacted by people that you can mention here, by any government, to contribute your ideas in a larger scale?
Not yet.
Would you be interested?
Yes, very much so. We have a handshake with the Rockefeller Foundation to see if we can scale this idea globally. And we have 100 cities called the Resilient Cities Program. We're the living example of that program in Pittsburgh. And the city of Pittsburgh has designated Manchester Bidwell as the model that they're going to support. And so we're working in, we will potentially be working in 100 cities around the world. Vancouver, London, Beijing, Singapore.
All over, yeah. Rio also.
Rio.
I mean, Latin America, I can say, would definitely benefit from a model like this.
Claro.
Especially for the younger children. And also for the training for adults.
I mean, algún día.
Algún día.
Sí.
Sí. Would you probably go back to, it would it be in Costa Rica?
Oh, claro.
Okay.
Por supuesto.
You should consider Argentina too.
Oh, that's. Porque Alicia Corrubias, Argentina es un la lista.
Okay, he's just making a Spanish joke. But so what other countries are you working on to expand?
Well, we right now have early conversations in Mexico City, Costa Rica, Spain. What else?
I think you have something in the Caribbean, don't you?
Oh, see.
Yeah, Virgin Islands or
no,
Bahamas?
Nassau.
Nassau.
We just signed Nassau last week.
Oh, so that's happening.
Yes,
that's
that
great.
Was last week. So we're beginning the team to work there in August, in earnest.
That's wonderful.
And great. We may go to St. Croix and a little island called Eleuthera before this is over. So we could potentially have three centers in the Bahamas.
So this is a model that you created here in Pittsburgh.
Correct.
You were born here, we were raised here under conditions that were not necessarily the best, but you were lucky to find a great teacher that came along, and I imagine a family that was very supportive. Did you ever think of leaving Pittsburgh?
No.
Why?
Even when I was flying jets, I never considered that.
Why?
Well, because you can bring the world to where you live. You don't have to go to the world. You can bring it here.
Mm-hmm.
And so I live in the neighborhood where I was born, and we'll die there.
Mm-hmm.
No ever thought about leaving Pittsburgh. Never will.
So how do you see Pittsburgh today? What has changed for the good since you were a young child? And what are the challenges that still...
Well, I think that the what's for the good is that it's a very diverse community, multiple populations with a pretty bright future. The trick is going to be to make sure it's inclusive, that the poor people and the people who are struggling are part of the future, not just the past. So economic diversity really is economic and cultural diversity and inclusion, I think, are the themes that Pittsburgh needs to be continued to be recognized for our efforts in that space, and to just continue to build on that tradition.
Mm-hmm.
Very important. Very important to the country, maybe the world.
Are you hopeful about Pittsburgh being able to attract talent from...
Oh, yeah.
...from around the country or maybe from around the world?
Well, look at the university system. And I'm a trustee of the University of Pittsburgh. And, of course, Pitt, you know, is a global university. Carnegie Mellon. I mean, so we are endowed... you know, with great universities that are in fact attracting world-class talent, and the businesses that are here, the Googles and the Ubers and so forth, are bringing talent as well, and a lot of the spin-off, the companies that are starting up, the innovation that's going on, is very, very exciting. It's created a very positive climate for Pittsburgh and the region, not just Pittsburgh, but the Allegheny County and Southwest Pennsylvania.
And what can be done to make that momentum be more inclusive?
Well, leadership, for one. The political leadership has got to continue to insist on these themes in all that they do, the way that public resources are utilized to support people who are working in this space, reaching out to people that are working with homeless people, the indigent, the left behind. Those programs need to be reinforced and reassured that they have value. And the best way to communicate that is to have the political leadership repeatedly enhance those themes.
We're talking to Bill Strickland, President and CEO of Manchester Bidwell Corporation. What other exciting projects do you have coming down the pipeline? What are your dreams that you would like to see happen?
Well, I want to build 100 centers in the world.
Sorry, say that again?
I want to build 100 centers in the world.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Partnership with Rockefeller. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, preferably.
but tell us a little bit more about that project. What does Resilient City mean? How is that
defined? These are cities that have experienced a trauma. a spike in crime, high unemployment, a spike in drug abuse, a natural disaster, a flood or a tornado, but that there are cities that are resilient in the sense that they have organized the capability to come back from a defeat and turn it into a victory. And we have very progressive leadership here, both at the county executive and the mayor's office, who have demonstrated this resilience and, you know, sort of bulldog determination to do the right thing. So that's why Pittsburgh got picked as an outstanding example of a community that survived the demise of the steel industry, reorganized itself, and is bringing in technology and the university system to create a very different Pittsburgh for the future, very different county and region for the future as well.
Mm-hmm. And you'll be a part of scaling that to the 100 resilient cities.
Yes. Yeah, we've been picked as the model for the 100 cities.
That's amazing. Congratulations on that.
Yeah, so far so good. Mm-hmm. Pretty exciting stuff.
So for people who haven't visited the center, is that open? Can people visit it?
5 days a week, we're officially open. And during the fall and the winter, there are jazz concerts.
Well, let's talk about the jazz, yes.
Yeah, every weekend, essentially, from September through May, there are jazz concerts open to the public. And we bring in world-class artists. We started with Dizzy Gillespie in the 80s, Herbie Hancock, you know, the Count Basie Orchestra. I mean, literally the who's who of contemporary jazz have performed at Manchester Craftsman's Guild. We've won 7 Grammys for our efforts. So we have a very high win rate for recordings to wins in the world of Grammys. And so it's really become a very pristine presenting environment and recording environment. We now have 700 recordings that we've made. Probably the most important collection of jazz recordings in one place in the world is right here in the north side of Pittsburgh at Manchester Craftsman's Guild.
That's incredible. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's a good story.
So where can people go and learn more about, for example, about the jazz or...
Come over to Manchester Craftsman's Guild, 1815 Metropolitan Street. Just show up at the front door.
Perfect.
Well, don't need an invitation, just walk in.
Just pop up.
That's right.
So it's been a real pleasure talking to you. It's an honor. You're, I think, one of those larger-than-life people that make Pittsburgh, you know, the great city that it is. And congratulations on all of your accomplishments and everything that you have coming up. And hopefully the next interview we'll do it in Spanish.
Muy bien.
Thank you, Bill. It's
Paso
a pleasure.
Buen día.
And to all of you, thank you for listening, and we'll be back next week.
Thank you for listening to the World Affairs Report, brought to you by the World Affairs Council of Pittsburgh in cooperation with KQV News Radio. The World Affairs Council is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that has been bringing the world to Pittsburgh for over 80 years. To learn more about the council and upcoming events, please visit worldpittsburgh.org. Be with us again next week when we take a 30-minute look at issues of global importance.